You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text SUNNY to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text SUNNY to 200-300. That's SUNNY to 200-300. SUNNY to 200-300.
This post-game show is brought to you by Geico. Switch to Geico today and see all the ways you could save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
Yo, Hosmer's still a Royal. I don't care what anyone tells me.
Forever.
He's a Red Sox now.
Hosmer sucks, and he is by far the best first baseman the Red Sox have had in about 4 years.
Why can't your team catch anything?
Great question, Dan.
They catch L's.
Don't know.
But is this as laughable a defensive thing as you've seen in your lifetime, caring way too unreasonably about the Red Sox, where you guys keep looking up in the air and can't catch pop-ups?
It is. I have attended probably 200 youth baseball games from the time my son was 7 until the time he's now 14. And I don't think I've seen a worse defense on any baseball field anywhere than the Red Sox in July. It was truly shocking. Like they did the thing that like 7-year-old teams do, which is the ball goes straight up in the air and they all like run around for a while. Then the ball just lands between them and they just look at each other like, oh, thought you had it. They're professionals. These are professional baseball players. It's shocking how bad they've been in July.
I really admire
end of their season.
Mike Schur's baseball analysis. And I don't actually want to do this with him and dork out on baseball every time that he calls in. But he has agreed in his precious time to call in every day until he gets tired to do a stat of the day to help us with our daily content burden. And so he sends these to me all the time. And the last one he sent me was an amazing one on Shohei Ohtani. Is this one where we're going, or you can just keep producing these forever?
I have three for you. You can pick.
Wow.
I have that Shohei Ohtani stat. I have a Matt Carpenter stat, and I have a Vin Scully stat. What do you want? You want to spin the wheel, or do you want to just pick one?
I'm fine doing this. I'd like to introduce this new segment to our audience, and may it live 1,000 days where you call in with a stat, but you're overprepared for the first one.
I can speak on behalf of everyone. No one wants the Matt Carpenter one. Okay.
I think it's pretty good.
Carp?
It's pretty good. Which one do you like best before we get to it?
I like all of them. I like all baseball stats. I can't pick. It's like choosing among my children, Dan.
Start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day. Start of the day. It is the start of the day.
It is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So you've agreed to do this absurd thing, and are you telling me that this is so easy for you that you'd be happy to give us all three of these because it's not going to be any problem for you to come up with these daily because they're on your mind all the time?
That's correct.
All right.
All right. Well, go ahead and give us all three, and we will decide which is the best of these.
Seem that busy. I mean,
folks, in 1949, Ted Williams won the Triple Crown. He had a .650 slugging percentage and a 1.141 OPS. This year, 36-year-old Matt Carpenter, who was essentially out of baseball, was cut by the Rangers, decided to give it one more shot with the Yankees, has a .791 slugging percentage and a 1.226 OPS.
So he's the best player ever.
That's right.
I stand corrected on Carpenter. My bad, Mike.
You're saying this is over how many games? Is it 50 games? You're saying that
It's only 42 games, but he shows no signs of slowing down. He's on a pace. He would hit, if he kept this up for a full year, he'd hit like 60 homers and win the Triple Crown.
It's funny because I have a Ted Williams stat of the day as well, courtesy of Tommy Heinsohn. Said about Bill Russell. Look, all I know is the guy won two NCAA championships, 50-some college games in a row, the 56 Olympics, then he came to Boston and won 11 championships in 13 years. And they named a tunnel after Ted Williams.
But that's Boston.
Splendid splinter.
Mike, go ahead and defend your region and eulogize Bill Russell, who you also love, though not perhaps as much as the great Ted Williams tunnel.
No, I love Bill Russell just as much, if not more. In fact, when I was at SNL, there was this big... NBC had like a 75th anniversary special that I worked on in 2001, I think, or 2002. And everyone from every show that NBC had ever made came. Like the cast of every single show you can think of that's ever been on NBC.
Night Court?
And all the Night Court... Saint Elsewhere, Cheers,
Night. All of
Misfits of Science.
Every show.
Misfits of Science showed up.
Heavy hitters. All heavy hitters showed up.
Heavy. Alf was there, folks. Alf was there. Okay. And the for some reason, dad. Also Bill Russell was there. And the only person that I cared about meeting or talking to was Bill Russell. And my friend Robert's from Massachusetts, and I went up and just genuflected in front of Bill Russell, and it's the most nervous I've ever been to meet anyone in my entire life. I shook his hand and my hand was shaking. Like it was a life-changing moment for me.
Punky Brewster was there.
I don't know, man. Sure, Punky Brewster is there too.
You just said every show. I
mean, the second stat of the day is, and you were wrong, Stugatz, about Carpenter, right?
He's been Ted Williams this season.
What is that?
Do it for a full season.
Yes, of course. I mean, but that's just baseball. Is that it? Like, or it's one of the weirdest things you've ever seen in your life.
He rebuilt his swing. That's what he keeps saying, is that he sought help from various people and rebuilt his swing. And the Yankees took a flyer on him. And every time the Yankees take a flyer on anybody, they turn into Ted Williams. So it's not like it was surprising.
Well, you say that, but Joey Gallo was broken. Like you keep saying that, and Joey Gallo stunk for them.
Yeah, and then they traded him to the Dodgers. Why would anyone take Joey Gallo? I don't understand this. It's absurd. And they didn't give up anything. They give up a double-A pitcher who's okay. But still, I don't know why anybody helps the Yankees.
Because when Joey Gallo gets hot, like when he has a month, he has a month. And the Dodgers are banking on they'll get the month. The month is like a 20-homer month. I mean, you know that, yeah. Mike. Yeah, he's a straight
The last
hitter.
Time he yeah. had that month was like 2018 or something.
He's due, though.
Bosom buddies. Was Peter Scolari there?
Tom Hanks.
I believe he was.
Tom Hanks was there? Now,
I don't know if Tom Hanks was there. Sid Caesar was there. There's the one for Greg Cody. Tell Greg Cody Sid Caesar was there.
What was the second stat of the day?
Vin Scully, the greatest baseball announcer who ever was or ever will be, was the announcer for the Dodgers for, by my count, 24,274 days. That means that in the time that Vin Scully was broadcasting Dodger games, the average human being could have walked to the moon and then walked back. And then walked to the moon again.
No, that's not true.
And then walked to the moon again.
That can't be true, no.
And then walked back and then walked to the moon.
That's how much baseball he's broadcast. That's how much of his life was spent in front of baseball games.
Sounds totally made up. I got to be honest with you.
It's true. 67
years. You can't walk
to
the moon. I mean,
Chico and the Man. Obviously Freddie Prinze Sr. wasn't there, but was everyone else from Chico and the Man there?
I don't think so.
The last stat of the day, and we're going to do this every day until he gets bored with us. Your last stat of the day is?
This is courtesy of CBS Sports on Twitter. Through his first 50 career starts as a pitcher and 500 games as a hitter, Shohei Ohtani has more strikeouts than Jacob deGrom and a lower ERA than Gerrit Cole, and more home runs than Ted Williams and more RBI than Ken Griffey Jr.
The kid.
The splendid splinter.
Was Meredith Baxter Burney there and the rest of the Family Ties crew?
Some of the Family Ties crew was there. Michael J. Fox was there.
But Meredith Baxter Burney?
I don't think Meredith Baxter Burney was there. Stephen Gross, the dad, was there because he did a bit with Alf that Michael Tina Fey wrote.
Right. Alf was actually there.
Michael Gross.
Somebody was walking around with the costume, not the costume, the hand puppet of Alf.
No, it was a costume.
Alf costume.
This isn't really a stat, but it's an anecdote. So the SNL studio, Studio at H, the Rockefeller Center, is very, very small. There aren't very many dressing rooms. It's very cramped. It's only about 250 seats. So all of these people, all of these stars, everybody, Jay Leno and Seinfeld and the cast of every show, they all were very accommodating because there wasn't the usual amount of makeup and hair and styling and luxury that they're accustomed to. But everybody was like, hey, this is a once in a lifetime thing, whatever. Everybody was very, very nice. The only person who was a pain in the ass was the Alf guy.
Oh, no.
Of course.
The Alf guy. The guy who operates Alf demanded his own dressing room a separate dressing room for the puppet.
That's great. That's an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
The Stugatz of the puppet kingdom.
Mike, you need to answer a question for us that's been lingering all week. Do we still have a sweeps week in TV?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I heard you debating this. There is still sweeps.
Yeah.
It is still a thing.
Is it May still?
There's three of them. There's one in November, one in February, and one in May. The way that the companies set ad rates for the following year. Their ratings during that. It's why the Super Bowl moved to February, because Super Bowl used to be in January. Mm-hmm. And then the networks realized that if they move the Super Bowl to February, then the audience, the enormous audience, would count as a sweeps month audience.
You guys sounded
so. They moved it to February.
So unsophisticated the other day.
Promising you, sure, that we will get you in and out in the future. But I do have a couple of questions for you because you're very smart on the business of television. It seems to be changing at a crazy rate of speed. And I wanted to get some trade deadline stuff from you. But from now on, going forward, it'll just be stat of the day.
My two dads. All right. With the guys from My Two Dads there.
I don't remember.
Paul Reiser wasn't.
You know, I feel like you kind of oversold this event. I'm just going to say that right now.
No,
it was 21 years ago, man. I don't remember every single person who
Helen Hunt
was in
there.
You remember the important people who were there.
What?
The famous people that were there.
My Two Dads, not important or famous?
Paul Reiser.
Helen Hunt.
Do a little offshoot of your podcast there. I mean, and were these shows properly rated or admired, or ascertain whether they were properly admired in their time?
TV Pope, coming soon.
Give me a minute on what's happening in the business of television.
You're going to hear news today that a lot of layoffs are coming at HBO Max and the Warner Media Empire because it was bought by Discovery. Which is crazy to say that Warner Brothers, movie studio, TV studio, HBO, all that entire conglomerate, which is responsible for some of the best entertainment in history, was bought by Discovery, which no one really thinks of as a major player. They took on an enormous amount of debt to buy it from AT&T, and as a result, they're $57 billion or something in the hole, and they have to slash costs. And you're about to hear news, I think, in a couple hours that they're laying off a ton of people. And it's terrible because HBO Max, for my money, is maybe has the highest quality stuff of any of the new streaming services, and they're going to get hammered because of corporate debt requirements for to lower their debt for Wall Street. And that's sort of happening all over, you know, the a lot of these, you know, you read yesterday that Batgirl, the movie that was made for HBO Max, $90 million movie, they're just never going to air it. They would rather take it as a tax write-off by never airing it.
Well, can explain some of this stuff to me, because they did get rid of it. And they said it wasn't because of confidence in the directors. They said it wasn't because confidence in the quality. They said it needs to feel like a blockbuster. And now a whole bunch of Warner Brothers stuff is about to disappear. And I think the news that's about to break is what? 70% of HBO Max is about to disappear.
That's the rumor, that HBO Max is essentially going to be folded into Discovery Plus, which is their streaming service, and that all of the existing shows that they want to keep are going to be folded under the HBO mothership umbrella. I don't know. I don't work for that company. I have one show, Hacks, that's that I produce that's there. But this is happening a lot. These giant projects are being shuttered, or they would rather literally not air them. My friend has a TV show called Chad, where they made an entire season of the show and then just said, like, yeah, we're not going to air the season of the show. We're just going to bury it and put it on a shelf, because they would rather take the tax write-off as a loss than air the show. And it's sad. It's like, this is what happens when the ruthless Wall Street capitalism stuff takes complete dominance over the actual creative endeavors that are being made. And it's happening not just at that company, but at a lot of companies. So it's a bummer, man. It's like they make good stuff there. And the executives who work there are very talented, and they're very good at what they do. And in the short time that HBO Max has been around, they've made a lot of really good shows. And now they're going to apparently be gutted. And it's, it's just a unfortunate result of this kind of intense merger and acquisition stuff that's going on, this battle for size and power in this new industry. And I don't know, there's no, you know, the first domino to fall was when Netflix announced that they had lost subscribers for the first time ever. Their stock went down like 70%. I think that put the fear of God into everybody. And now they're all scrambling, and they're all trying to cut their losses. And it's bad for people like me and anyone who likes good content.
I don't want this to sound like this is the cost of doing business, but this just, a lot of this just sounds evil. Between what happened here and what happened with the CNN streaming platform, this is bad. This is really bad.
Yeah, man. I don't disagree. I think that everybody has always known the deal, which is that, you know, as my friend John Rigi used to say, like, we're all just selling light bulbs. This is how old this is. When GE was running, GE was running NBC. It's like, we're all just selling light bulbs. But we get that this is commerce, and that it's not a pure expression of artistic creativity. This is capitalism. And the downside of it, the upside of it is that you get to make stuff. The downside of it is that when the capitalism takes over, or there's a downturn in the economy or whatever, they don't really care about the content. They care about survival, and they care about their stock price and all that sort of stuff. And so they get really, really harsh with cutbacks and layoffs and everything else, like any company does. So all of this, this massive expansion that you've seen since roughly 2010 or 2011, when Netflix started becoming an actual content creator instead of just a place you went to watch reruns, that has been unfettered expansion for 10 years, and now it's contracting, and it's going to be bad for people who like to watch shows, because there's going to be fewer of them, and they're going to be pretty ruthless, I think, when it comes to laying people off and cutting back.
Mike, what's next then? Because we were promised that this advent of streaming technology, more options, and you didn't have to go through the traditional gatekeepers. And now what we just described sounds like, well, we're back to square one. So what's the next evolution?
The next evolution is more, I would guess, I don't know, but I would guess that there's more consolidation. I think you'll read that some of these places that are struggling, you know, Netflix has like 55% market share or something in the streaming world. Like, more than half of people in America have used Netflix, which is crazy. That's an extreme outlier in terms of penetration for any company. And everybody else has been struggling to try to keep up. And I think you'll see more mergers. I think there's places like Paramount Plus, Peacock, which is my hometown streamer at NBC. you know, whatever, Warner Brothers is still an independent studio technically. There's Sony out there. I think you're going to see more of these companies join forces by merging with each other to try to just take a bigger chunk out of the streaming marketplace. But also what's happening is that people are, you know, the economy went south starting with the pandemic. It's recovered a little bit, but then it's been stumbling and kind of meandering along. And for the first time since 2011, there are people who are looking at their finances and thinking like, well, what can I cut back on? And some, a place like Netflix, where, you know, Netflix had, again, like unfettered growth. They just outpaced everybody. Everybody got Netflix and no one wants to give it up. But Netflix has also made some strategic decisions that have hurt them. Like, they keep canceling shows before they can get too expensive. They cancel shows after 2 or 3 years when people still like them. And that has trained a lot of people to get to not invest, because they're like, well, why should I watch these shows if they're just going to be canceled after 2 years? And so for the first time, I think ever, people have thought like, you know what? I'll get rid of Netflix. Netflix isn't cheap. It's, you know, whatever it is, $15 a month. That's, you know, $180 a year. And I just put it down for 6 months. And when I get a better job or when I have more, you know, discretionary income, I'll pick it back up. All those shows will still be there. The shows never leave the service, so I won't really miss anything. And so there are people who are cutting back for the first time since Netflix started its run. So I think they're all trying to figure out exactly how to make this work. And that will mean probably more consolidation in the industry and more people trying to add advertising. Netflix is apparently going to add an advertising tier to their system. I think other places will too. So the, you know, nobody really knows. This is, we're going on into the 10th year or something of everybody saying the same thing, which is no one has any idea what's going to happen. But the best guess is that more places join forces and merge with each other, and people start being a little more particular about what they subscribe to and what they don't, which is why it's a bummer that HBO Max is going through this right now, because HBO Max, to my money, was worth the what you were paying for it. You know, they seem to have great shows coming on all the time. The people there have done a really good job of programming it, and I'm sad to see some of them go, because I think they do a good job.
It's got depressing.
Yeah. Let's pick up the mood. Mike, what's the budget?
Walk to the moon and back. And
yeah.
Mike, what do you think the budget is for the rehearsal? Because we were talking.
Oh my
Jessica
God!
Were
doesn't
about
it seem like a giant waste of money?
How big is that
he
budget?
He bankrupted HBO Max.
That's why. Yeah.
I'll bet it's less than you think, because they're not paying actors for one thing, or they're paying them very little, and it's really just Nathan and like the set of the bar that he built for the first episode. Like, that's not super cheap, but it's not. It's not millions of dollars.
But
for
he
him
transported
to do that,
so. Across the country and had Oregon. It rebuilt.
He did indeed, yeah. But that's not that. Those aren't the expenses of a reality show. Which his show isn't really a reality show, but it's in the same general family. The expenses of a reality show are way lower than the expenses of a.
What does F-Boy Island show cost to produce?
Probably like $30 million an episode or something. You have to pay all the F-boys. I mean, those guys are cheap.
That's what I'm sad to see go, honestly. Are we going to finish the season or not?
No, look, if you love that show, then you're happy right now, because you're going to get a lot more of shows like that. What you're going to see, reality shows are incredibly cheap to make, and you're going to see a ton more of that kind of stuff. Like that's what they want. Like what these places want. The kind of shows that I tend to make and that other people who make fictional shows make are expensive. They're half hours and an hour long dramas and comedies. Those are really expensive. Reality shows are dirt cheap. So you're get ready. There's a lot more F-Boy Island type shows coming at you over the next couple of years.
That's great. So there's just a season of Chad that was done and will never see the light of day. Like, how does that become a tax write-off, though?
Because if they don't air it, it's just a loss. Like, the way these things work, they just write it off as like, oh yeah, we made this and it never aired in any capacity.
Could
so
you
we just
could
lost
you get that for Billy? Could
yeah, you? Can you send me season two of Chad?
I don't have access to it, so no. And even if I did, I think that would probably be a bad idea for me to try to do.
Can you lighten up the mood before you get out of here by just telling us what fired you up at the trade deadline? We've done a very poor job of covering baseball the last couple of days.
I mean, Juan Soto and Bell going to the Padres makes the Padres a legitimate World Series threat. That's exciting. Like, the Padres are great now. They have the best 2-3-4 in baseball by far. I was a little bit annoyed that the Mets didn't do anything, because I feel like the Mets, Stu Gatz's beloved Mets,
are a
legitimate contender for the first time in a really long time.
Yeah.
And I don't have any inside information on this, but my gut says they were after either JD Martinez or Nate Eovaldi from the Red Sox, and they thought the Red Sox were going to blink. The Red Sox did not blink and kept those guys. But there's no way that the Red Sox were actively shopping those guys. There's no way the Mets weren't interested. And I think that they just kind of couldn't pull the trigger for whatever reason, which I think is crazy. Like, it's weird for Steve Cohen to suddenly get conservative at this moment.
Right.
Like, his team is actually really good, and there's only 2 months left of the season. And those two guys would have helped. Like, they would have helped that team. I don't know that they were after them. I think they were. So that bummed me out. But Soto getting traded, I mean, Soto's literally Ted Williams. And Ted Williams doesn't get traded at 23 with 2 years of team control left. So the fact that the Padres picked him up means they're for real. Their farm system is so good. They traded five of their top prospects. They still have like four guys or something who are ranked in the top 100 prospects in the minors. And I think they have maybe two or three. But they're a legitimate threat. If they play the Dodgers in the playoffs, they could beat the Dodgers now. Like, they could legitimately threaten any team.
For the next 10 years, Mike. I mean, if they stay healthy.
Yeah, well, right. If they sign Soto, that's right. The thing. Like, yes. They've got him for two more years. They have to sign him because they've got Machado locked up forever. They've got Tatis locked up forever. They'd have to sign Soto. But San Diego's an awfully nice place to live and play, and he might want to stay there. I don't know. But they'll have to pay him $500 million if they want to keep him. So who knows if they decide to do that.
Sampson was on with us earlier, and we got to play the Vin Scully baloney sound, a bologna in his face.
Bologna.
Because tell me if I'm wrong here, because he very often on transactions, I feel like he thinks he knows more than he does. And so we hit him with this.
Bologna.
On the commentary, I said to him that the trade that the Brewers made, that Hader, you're not going to replace what Hader has been. You might get something close, but you will never again have what Hader was, no matter what you think of your prospects. Am I wrong?
Well, Hader has been otherworldly, and in the last month has faltered a lot, and no one knows whether that's a blip. Like, relievers often go through, even the best relievers go through months where they get lit up. So it's unclear whether the league has figured him out or whether this is a temporary thing. I think it's awfully hard to replace guys like Hader, yes, but I don't necessarily think, I mean, look, the league right now is littered with guys. I talked about this last time I was on your little show here. The league is littered with relievers you've never heard of who throw 99 or an unhittable. The Cardinals have like four of them. And so I don't know that you'll never replace that guy, but it was a strange move for a team that's leading their division to get rid of that guy.
Mike, you know what the Padres are doing, right? I mean, you've done weekend observations. What do you know what they're doing.
What do you mean, little?
Bologna.
They're going for it right now.
What line tickled you in there? What'd you hear?
Billy saying Jabba Chamberlain.